welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for listening. 34 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning. Hope everyone is doing well out there. Join us in studio. Always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. I had to make way for some business yesterday on Monday, his usual time, but is happy to reaccommodate and join us today. This on Tuesday, State Representative Matt Simpson in studio. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Jeff. Thanks for accommodating the schedule. We had a busy day yesterday. We had a good day for Baldwin and Mobile County yesterday. I was able to get Speaker of the House, Mac McCutcheon, down here to kind of see and feel what's going on down here in Baldwin County. We started off the morning with a briefing from Congressman Bradley Byrne, who spoke to both the Mobile and Baldwin House delegations about what we can do with FEMA and how FEMA can help the citizens and what we need to be aware of to kind of push them in the right directions to go to get the help that they may need. After that, we had a press conference to talk about some consumer protection bill, the bill that I've worked on. We talked about some of the stuff. DA Bob Wilters was there to talk about, you know, what can be done, what they're doing to protect the citizens. We had the Attorney General's office send down the Consumer Information Department, so they spoke about what all they're working on. We talked about the bill we had worked on, and then Speaker McCutcheon was able to speak and talk about some of the stuff that we had done in the past and stuff that he's aware of. After that, we left. We went down to Orange Beach. And what was important about taking the speaker down to Orange Beach was getting him the opportunity to see firsthand how these strengthened Alabama homes are affected by what happened. How you can see, we were able to take him to a neighborhood where two homes had the strengthened Alabama homes and were fortified. Four homes did not. The two homes with the fortified roofs were able to make it with no damage on the roof, but the other four had lost almost their whole entire roofing. So to be able to show him the progress that these programs do, and to be able to show how they affect our area down here, is important. And it's not something that we can go through and just say when we get to the well, when we try to speak and we try to tell people, look at what's going on. It works so much better when you have people that have it, that firsthand experience to see stuff.
And you need to get that. And it goes to beyond just recovery, but what can we do better in the future? And this is what we can do just from a legislative standpoint, because really, the legislature's role is more forward-looking than looking back and what we need to do to get things back to normal.
It's that, you know, you look at that program specifically, the Strengthen Alabama Homes, and it's about a three-year wait is what we're told, for the grants as they dole out the money that's in there. And you can look and say, hey, we may need to put some more money into this pot to see what we can do to help the people down here. So the Strengthen Alabama Homes was important to show him that area. We also, after we left there, we went to the farmers, Agriculture Commissioner Rick Pate had a listening session. We also had U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue flew in, so he was able to be there, and we just listened to local farmers, and they talked about how the crops were going to be affected by, you know, the pecans and the cotton and how they were going to be affected by what happened here. You know, it's not just that the pecan farmers lost this crop. There are many of them that lost their trees. And, you know, when you're not talking about dealing with just a single crop, you're talking about over years the loss that's going to happen. So, you know, have an opportunity to listen to the farmers from there. And then after that, we came over to Mobile County, took him to the Dauphin Island Sea Lab so he can see, in Representative Chip Brown's district, so he can see the damage done to the Dauphin Island Sea Lab and what, you know, what they need and what they're looking for. And then one of the things that I'm, you know, kind of happy about, we were able to take the speaker back across the Bayway. So he was on the Bayway at 5 o'clock yesterday. So he got to see the traffic on the Bayway at 5 o'clock, which is important for my district.
Yeah, well, and that, I guess, getting that firsthand experience, because it does seem when you talk to those guys, and I lived up in Huntsville for a while, that this is just such a it's just far away, out of mind, out of sight, that you get these guys in leadership a glimpse of what's going on, and then maybe that moves the ball a little bit more than it would otherwise.
It is, you know, it's difficult when you just go up, because everybody thinks their district is the most important district,
right?
And that's the job they're supposed to do. They're supposed to advocate for their district, and for us, you know, we work really well with both the Mobile and Baldwin delegation. We work well together, But we could go up and talk till we're blue in the face about how important Mobile and Baldwin County are to the state of Alabama. But until that person has the boots on the ground and that personal experience to see this stuff and see firsthand information of, okay, they're not just talking and they're not just saying these things. This isn't just some talking point they've discussed. This is something that they live. So, you know, our delegation lives what happened in Hurricane Sally. And to have the Speaker of the House specifically come down and talk about this stuff was a good day for us.
Yeah, but the the changing the building requirements or doing things like that, that really falls, I assume, in the legislature's lap. I mean, that what do you, insurance maybe to some degree as well. You have all these other issues that now the storm has passed, and we're looking and we're seeing and we're watching what's going on. And then, you know, once we get the FEMA, once the FEMA leaves and we get things picked up and patched up, then it's like in the future, what can be done beyond insurance, beyond building code requirement changes or things like that? What else needs to be done?
And that's exactly one of the points we talked about yesterday. You know, we have a great delegation in Baldwin County with the experience that they have with Steve McMillan and Representative Joe Faust and Representative Harry Shiver. One of the things the Speaker was able to talk about and one of the things Representative McMillan was able to talk about was, I think there were 11 bills passed since 2004, since Ivan, to talk about how we kind of made some differences and made some changes into the codes, into the insurance, into the wind policy, into these things to try to help the citizens down here. They've passed 11 bills since 2004 to help make it better. And every time you get a chance to get a new storm, it's another opportunity to look and see, okay, what works well, what works, what didn't work, what do we need to spend more money on, what do we need to focus on? So, you know, advocating for the area, that's part of legislation. That's what our job is, and we were able to get that stuff done.
How much has really changed since the Ivan experience? And how do you look at, like, well, yeah, all that stuff worked in that era. Is there a remarkable change in what we were looking at then compared to now?
I think the change specifically, you can talk about the strength in Alabama homes that wasn't there at the time. And you talk about these homes that are fortified, that can get this, you know, that grant, where the grant, I believe, is $10,000 that the state provides to a home for a new roof. So a person can put, if it's, we were talking to somebody yesterday afternoon, they had a $12,500 roof, so they only had to pay out of pocket $2,500, and they got a fortified roof out of it. And to come through with that process, their home, their roof stayed on. Their neighbors did not. They talk about some of these things to get it where they're strapped in. They have all we had a builder that was there to talk to us, to talk about the way the nails are done, the way that the shingles are put in, the way that the roofs are strapped in. That stuff makes such a huge difference. And to walk down there, you know, you can see the blue tarp, blue tarp, blue tarp, blue tarp. But then you get to the fortified homes and it skips it. Those homes did not have, you know, not a shingle is blown out of the way. And there is not a displacement at all on that roof. And that's important to tell the people down here, is like, this grant works. This pool, this Strengthen Alabama program works. And it helps save the people down here money out of their pocket that they would have to spend because of that pool and that program.
How expensive is it to implement something like that? I mean, do you walk us through that, because does government pick up cost, or is there incentives with insurance? Obviously, maybe your insurance premiums are lower if you go with the Strength of Alabama Homes program. How do you get implementation in these storm impacted areas?
It's like a grant. You have to go and apply through the process. You had to get on a waiting list, and that waiting list was long. It's about a 3-year waiting list. Once you get on there, you get an estimate for. You have to get an estimate from three individual roofing companies. You can decide which one you want to go with. The government will pay that roofing company $10,000. So anything over that $10,000, you have to pay out of your pocket. So you have to show the government that, you know, they make sure that you can document what you need to do, that you can cover the remaining costs. They don't want to put, you know, they don't want to spend the $12,000, the $10,000, and you can't afford the rest. It doesn't get the roofer to do that. So you help that process out, and it helps the citizens down here to be on that wait list to get that $10,000 grant and to have that new roof put on their home to help save their building, to help save their home.
Yeah. So and it's just it over time will you can see the difference, but it just takes time. And getting to that point, though, I'm excuse me for not knowing this, but it just seems like such an overwhelming process, because there's a lot of roofs that need that.
There are, and that's the process they my understanding is they spend the money quarterly. Like they had the money, it doesn't come all out at one time. They put it on the waiting list, and quarterly they budget how much they have to spend that quarter. They spend that money, and once that money is gone, they just continue the waiting list for the next quarter to go through. So it's a it's a process to get through. It's a long, lengthy process, and it's not easy, and it's difficult. But the benefits of that program have worked, and what we need to do, and what we need to advocate for, is to put more money into that program, so that way they have more homes that can get fixed quicker. What they have more homes that can, more people eligible that can get that help that they need before the next storm comes.
Well, statutorily, do you do this? Do you start making these required roofs new going forward, new construction?
That's some of the stuff they did. I believe they made some building codes a little higher. They increased the building codes, and you can see some homes that were built prior to the increased building code standards. I think it's little steps like that they can go through. And, you know, not all legislatively. A lot of it is the budget. We're arguing about the allocation of funds, and we're trying to say, hey, if we have money, that this is a better fund for it to go to than something else.
Because back in my construction days, in a previous life, I'm a graduate of Auburn University. I have a building science degree. But I worked for a classic glazing contractor. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of work at these condos at the beach. And what they would do, to test the strength of the glass, they take a 4x4, shoot it out of a cannon at the glass, and if it just broke, it was fine. If it shattered, it didn't pass code. So, you know, knowing that they build in all these protections to make sure that, like, you know, it can withstand certain storms, certain category storms, and then they double it or whatever. I mean, that's typically what they do, but gosh, that was had to be. It had to be the late 90s, so it's been a while since that. But the way we think about construction on coastal areas is a lot different than we ever have before, and surviving these storms. You don't want to be rebuilding every storm. Start building these buildings to where they can withstand category storms. The only thing about this, though, this is Category 2. This was more like a Category 4 in terms of damage.
Right, and the other thing about this program that I want to make sure that we were able to stress is it's not just a coastal program. It's statewide. So
does it go where there's...
Like people can apply if they have tornadoes, if tornadoes are up there. This is something that's helped, you know, that whole process. This is a statewide... Our job down here, and one of the jobs that I feel that we have, is we need to advocate and say, not only does it affect Baldwin and Mobile County, it affects you in Tuscaloosa. It affects you in Jefferson County. It affects you statewide, because these wind problems are not just based solely on hurricanes. There's a lot of tornadoes. A lot of, you know, you hear about, oh, well, we spent all this money on hurricane recovery. Well, there's money spent all over on tornado recovery as well. So it's not just a coastal issue. It's a statewide issue, and that's our responsibility to make sure we spread that news statewide.
But I suppose the pushback would be this. You guys choose to live on the coast in these hurricane-prone areas. I live in Mentone, Alabama. I'm not at risk. Why should my tax dollars go toward funding these structures or these structural requirements that have no really impact on my life? Do you get that? Do you see where that comes from sometimes?
Oh, we get that. I mean, you know, that's the nature of the beast in the house. You know, part of the problem you have is you have to convince people that South Alabama is important. One of the main discussion points is defining what is South Alabama. I have to convince people that Birmingham is not South Alabama, because there is a thought process that they think anything north, you know, south of Huntsville into Birmingham, oh, well, that's just South Alabama. So that's part of the give and take. That's part of the nature of what we have to do. And that's part of it's important to bring people down here from that area and show them, say, hey, this is what we are. This is where we stand. Now, I've heard the argument. I've heard people make that argument about what happens down in South Alabama doesn't affect me. But, you know, the fact is, tourism pays for the state of Alabama. We cover about 30% of the state's budget on tourism down here. If we just packed up and left and everybody moved to Mentone, well, the budget's not going to be there. You know, that they're not going to get that tax incentive for what they're looking for down here. So, yes, we live in a perfect area that I love, that I'm great, happy to be from, and I'm ecstatic about being from South Alabama, coastal Alabama specifically. But just because something happens in North Alabama doesn't mean it doesn't affect me down here. You know, right. It's the same center. We talked yesterday specifically with the speaker. What's good for the Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, if that's good for the state of Alabama, that's good for South Alabama. What's good for the beaches, that's good for the entire state of Alabama. What's good for the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, that's important for everybody that has in the state of Alabama. So it's you can't just bundle up your resources and say, well, you guys chose to live there. That's the way it's going to be.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk some national politics here in just a moment. A quick housekeeping note here. My friend Jim McClendon just on here, State Senator McClendon. I've been calling Representative Pringle co-chairman. They're actually different chairmen. They are the House chairman is Representative Chris Pringle, and he is the chairman of the Senate committee. So it's not a joint committee as I had thought. It was incorrectly reported by Alabama Political Reporter, but I told Senator McClendon I would pass that along to you, the listeners, that they are two separate committees in their respective bodies when it comes to reapportionment. I find that interesting. I thought they worked together in concert with one another, but apparently they don't, according to statute. But that fight is coming, the reapportionment fight. It's going to be, assuming I am still employed, gainfully employed in the radio business, we'll be talking a lot about that in the upcoming year. Got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Mona tried to tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.
Hey, I was country.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. 54 minutes after the hour. Just a few more moments with State Representative Matt Simpson here in studio with us. Debate tonight. How does the Simpson household gear up for a presidential debate in this era of Trump versus Biden?
We'll watch it. I'll make sure to watch it. I'll tell you what the headlines are going to be for tomorrow. If you want me to go ahead and tell you, it'll be that Biden did an outstanding job, overcame low expectations, and Trump stumbled. That's what the headlines are going to be nationally, regardless of what happens in this thing. The story's already written. They've set these low expectations, keeping Biden in the basement for however many months he's been in the basement. They make it think like, oh, look, if he can read a teleprompter, he'll be great. He stumbles doing that. So they'll do something similar to what they've done on that town hall. Well, he'll come out and he'll be able to put a cohesive sentence together, and that's all the expectations the Democrats have of him. And if he puts a couple big syllable words in there, they'll say he did a great job and look how bad Trump is. And they'll focus on this stuff, on the taxes, and they'll focus on this other stuff to make it seem like it's going to be a terrible situation. I think a lot of the I don't think, and I may be wrong here, but I don't think there's a lot of people that are going to say, you know what, I don't know what I'm going to do in November. I'm going to make up my decision based on what happens tonight. I just don't see that out there anymore. This isn't the 60s. This isn't the Kennedy-Nixon stuff. This is people have news at them all day nonstop. Who was it, Frank Luntz, that goes in and polls people and say, I'm undecided voter. I have no clue what I'm going to vote for in November.
There's two things on that. I feel like for a lot of people, this is going to be the first time they have seen Joe Biden and Donald Trump next to each other, though they're going to be socially distanced. And then maybe that there's something there to that, to the undecided. But I think more importantly, if either one of these candidates stumble out of the gate and they don't have a good performance, it could dispirit your base a little, and it could be very marginal. It may be, well, we lost this election, I'm just not even going to go bother to vote. So for that reason, both guys got – it's important that they have a good performance. I just don't know how – with the emotion all on the left, how much Biden's got to live up to those expectations to maintain that level of energy that they have. I think that level of energy is why Biden is so strong in the polls right now.
I think the level of energy, but I think the spin on it is also important on it. I mean, are you going to have somebody, does a moderator step in and say, no, that's not true, and they started trying to fact check something in there to the post and the graphics on the bottom of the screen, try to get and sway.
Well, what I say, Biden's dentures fall out of his mouth mid-debate or something like that, then that's going to be, the big discussion for years and years to come. And that it's not necessarily fact-checking and any of that, the substance. It's very stylistic approaches.
The gaffe? I mean, you're looking for the gaffe is what you're talking about?
Not even the gaffe. It could just be if somebody falls down or something like that. I mean, that to me could be... That's something. You would look for something that's purely superficial to us.
Yeah, and that may happen, but I think you have a lot of people that have their base, that have their mind made up, and if somebody falls down, well, then somebody will say, oh, well, look, the left wing, if say Trump falls down and slips, they'll say the left wing, they greased the floor and made him fall. So I think I think people will make their own excuses for whatever they want to make their excuses for.
We got to get out of here. Matt, thanks for joining us. Coming up on Midday Mobile with Sean, you got Rob Hulbert, my boss from Land Yap, and representatives from FEMA and the SBA. Mm-hmm. Want to make sure you stay tuned for
and floating that. Fish farms in the Gulf of Mexico. Could it be a thing? There was an act pushed through in the Senate the other day.
That just sounds like a boondoggle to me.
Floating fish farms.
All right, guys, I got to get out of here. This has been the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.